Hi, welcome to today's panel of blogs, buzz, and buddy lists. My name is Paul Harrell, and I'm the moderator for this panel. Welcome to this panel, and welcome to South by Southwest. If this is your first activity of the day, we hear that the parties last night went quite late and with burlesque and all sorts of activities. So some of you may just be waking up. You know, one of the things that certainly makes South by Southwest so special and what's given it a special prominence among all the festivals of the world is its understanding that film and our online lives are converging in ways that are now inseparable. And hopefully this is one of the things that we can speak to today, whether you're a filmmaker, whether you're a blogger, whether you're someone who's a designer or you're someone who's just simply interested in these issues. I would like to introduce the panelists that are here with us today. Sitting immediately to my left is Allison Wilmore, who's the... I'm actually going to give us this. I was going to show you everyone's blogs as we go through this, but maybe we can get someone to work on that while I introduce everyone. Allison Wilmore, who is the editor of IFC's film section and the writer of the Indie Eye blog, which was once upon a time just called the IFC blog. Allison's also the film host of IFC.com's new daily web show, Lunchbox, which launches tomorrow. Monday, March 10th. Sitting next to Allison is Karina Longworth, who blogs and podcasts about film for Spout.com. She's the co-founder and former editor-in-chief of Cinematical.com, and she has contributed to The Huffington Post, Filmmaker Magazine, New TV, and TV Squad, and she lives in Brooklyn. And immediately next to Karina is Ian Schaefer, who's the founder and CEO of the leading full-service interactive marketing agency, Deep Focus. Prior to founding Deep Focus in 2002, Ian was vice president of new media at Miramax Films. Here's Allison's. Here's Ian's.
The word F up.
Hey, there. It's Jack. It's Jack. This is Deep Focus. Presently, Deep Focus develops interactive marketing campaigns for not only brands like Nike and Vitamin Water, but nearly every major Hollywood studio, in addition to smaller independents. Named one of Advertising Age's 2007 Media Mavens, Ian has led Deep Focus to over 100 awards, including an Emmy nomination, 2 Webbies, and a Cannes Gold Lion. He's also the writer of the popular interactive marketing blog, creatively named IanSchaefer.com. And then next to Ian is Victor Pinheiro, who is the writer-producer of Second Skin, which perhaps you've heard about. It had a very successful premiere last night at South by Southwest. And Victor's most recent screenplay, The Quiet, was a Sundance feature film lab finalist. And this is the Second Skin website. And then part of that website includes a Second Skin blog. So today, you know, one of the first things that we wanted to do is we wanted to ask you, how many of you in here have a blog? I would say that's almost 50%. And then how many of you use social networking sites, MySpace, Facebook, or some combination of those and others? Okay. All right. And how many of you are filmmakers? Okay. Interesting. All right. So let's start with this. I'm going to ask you guys, how do you guys live off of your blogs and internet culture in general? And for the filmmakers in here, do these things translate into real profits for filmmakers? Who wants to start us off?
Sure. Start with
sure. Well, as far as Real Profits for Filmmakers, that has yet to be seen. We're still waiting for a distributor for our movie, but it's definitely worked really well to get us a lot of attention, and it's really helped to organically create a lot of interest. We started the blog 2 years ago, so over the last 2 years, we've really been growing and growing. And now it's great when we meet people on the streets who say they know of our film, or they read your blog, or it's not just your mom and dad reading your blog, which is great. So that's where we're at.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to realize that not only are you marketing, as a filmmaker, not only are you marketing a film, but you're also marketing yourself. And you're building a following around people that want to pay attention to you and what you do. And, you know, the beauty of social media, social networking, blogging, is it creates windows into the world of you, you know, whoever you might be. And it's something that I experience in maintaining a blog, albeit about interactive marketing, but you know, the blog yields people following me on Twitter or on MySpace or on Facebook, and you know, it's a great way for me to build some kind of emotional attachment, whether real or virtual, you know, to the people that are interacting with me. And if I were to treat the agency as a film, I can see tangible results in what I do personally to create awareness, visibility, and a relationship between potential clients, or in a filmmaker's case, moviegoers, with me. And, you know, any time that you can go to a film and feel some kind of attachment to a filmmaker, especially if you're a documentary filmmaker, you know, that's going to help. The difficult part is being able to measure just how much that's helping. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're not, as a filmmaker, probably not over ROI analyzing every single step you do. You're just trying to build a following. So I would argue that it's tantamount towards launching a film these days.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with a lot of that. I mean, I don't know how somebody would start a blog and put their own ads on it and make a living. But I make a living because I get paid a salary to write a blog. And in the film blog world, there are still not very many people that get to do that. And I think that one of the reasons why I have been able to do that is because I have, I guess, promoted myself kind of ridiculously. And I basically do that, you know, by using things like Twitter and Facebook and really like breaking down any sort of separation between like my personal life and my professional life. And it's just all sort of a continuum. And I'm one of, I think, the other people who gets paid to write a film blog. And I, you know, to be honest, stumbled upon it kind of by luck, but I think it's worked out for me mostly through, again, like self-marketing, and also through just kind of tirelessly sticking with it at, you know, the sacrifice of personal time, vacation, and things like that.
Can you Karina and Allison, can you all talk a little bit more about, you know, if how, talk about the specifics of what IFC and Spout are trying to do with having professional bloggers?
I think that we're just trying to have film coverage that has a specific voice. I think that that's one of the benefits of the blog, is that you are really light on your feet in terms of turning around coverage, and it's personal. You know, you write it for weeks and years, and it eventually becomes your voice. And I think that's what they're looking for, is actually, you know, someone that ideally you learn to trust and come back to.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And for what we're doing at Spout, a lot of what I do is basically being a voice for our site's mission to do kind of like trend spotting, discovering new trends and new filmmakers and new ideas about the way film interacts with technology. So it is like, I do become, I guess, like, the idea is that I'm supposed to be sort of a trusted friend or source, or, you know, somebody that people would actually, you know, think like, well, she's cool, so the stuff she likes must be cool. Traffic and cool. Thank you.
How much time do each of you spend, starting, Karina, you were joking about some of this. How much time do you spend between your blog and maintaining your various profiles and all those different things? How much time do you spend on this stuff a day?
Every hour that I'm awake. I mean, and it's, you said joking, but it really isn't. I mean, what personal life I do have is an offshoot of my work. I don't really, I would probably should change this, but I don't really socialize with people who aren't filmmakers or film bloggers. Pretty much everything I could do when I am awake could be considered an offshoot of writing my film blog.
I don't know that I want to put a number on it, but
it can't be less. I mean, it can't be more.
Right. That's true. That's true. In my sleep, I also maintain this film blog. I think that for me, a lot of it is that it's easily more than a full-time job to do the film blogging. And then I also, you know, want to see films. And so that becomes something that you do in your spare time. And so that it becomes something that's like a little bit all consuming.
Victor and Ian, what about you guys?
Well, I think one of the interesting dynamics at play is that, and I hopefully can speak for all of us, is that we have a vested interest in the success of communicating with people. And, you know, the more time that we spend communicating people, the more positive results that can come of it. And personally, every minute that I don't feel like I am contributing towards communicating with a client, with the rest of the industry, with friends in the industry and outside of it, I feel guilty personally. And that's just part of having such a vested interest in making your voice heard. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It's what gets you up in the morning and allows you to sleep at night. I don't feel bad about spending so much time doing it. My wife does sometimes.
But she's cool. Go ahead. Do you want to talk more about your wife? Victor, you can't spend all your time online because you're making a movie.
Right. I would say that exactly what Ian said is pretty much it goes for me too, especially in the last 3 or 4 months, because that's when I shifted into straight on marketing promotions mode. Before that, Peter and I were producing this movie, and I was writing a lot of the outlines and everything else that had words in it. And so I really had to balance my time. And as you'd imagine, the days when really interesting things happened, I had no time to blog. And the days that, you know, not a whole lot happened and I sat in my room all day, I had tons of time to blog. I could write Moby Dick one of those days. But I think you're right. Every minute you're not blogging or doing something to promote the movie, you feel guilty. I've been, you know, pulling these like 7 a.m. to 2 a.m. days for the last couple months. And it feels great. I mean, there's nothing better than that little joy you get from getting a new email in your inbox from, ooh, distributor, ooh.
Yeah, I mean, I want to clarify, like, I'm not feeling sorry for myself when I say that I do this. I mean, I really love what I do, and I don't want to be doing anything else. I think there is a kind of fear that, like, if I don't work as hard as I do, I will no longer have this opportunity. So,
do you think that's because of the so-called democratic aspect of the internet, that anyone can go online and start their own blog? Is that part of it, or is there something else?
Well, I like to think I'm good at what I do.
Well, I think you're good at what you do.
I mean, yeah, it's, I just, I hope that, I, it's for me, it's a people read what I write because it's a combination of, you know, yes, I work very hard at it, but
yeah,
I also have some kind of talent. I don't really feel like I need to work as hard as I do because there is so much competition. Because I think it might be different in different blog genres, but I think in the film blog genre, we all kind of are having a conversation with one another more than we're trying to beat one another.
Yeah, and I think that the real successful people that are successful at really using social media well, and that includes social networks and blogs and every other form of Twittering, it's passion. And I think people respect when you have real honest-to-goodness drive and passion about what it is that you do. And, you know, it's great when you can do it really well. But it's also important just to show your dedication to what it is that you're doing. It just yields a lot more respect and a lot more loyalty, actually. You wind up getting loyal readers and people that stay on a blog or read more about your film, that stay on the site for longer. I've also professed addiction to checking out my blog's analytics. And looking to see, oh, that's great. People are, you know, seeing 1.56 pages today as opposed to 1.53. You know, and that's it's good. It's good to know that. And it's good to know that what you're doing is actually affecting the actions of the people that are reading you. But it's all, again, it's a factor of the passion that you put into it.
Ian, do you think that the people that are reading your blog, your 1.5, whatever. You know, do you feel like those people are different from 1.5 billion, no, zillion, right? that are reading your blog? Are those necessarily people that might go to Deep Focus at some point? Or is there, I mean, certainly there's an overlap, but is it a different audience as well?
Well, it certainly is. I mean, there are people, it's fascinating to look at the live maps of the people that visit a site, whether it's, you know, my blog or our company's website, and they're coming from far off places that would probably never represent any kind of client base for us. But what's important for us, and again, this can translate into many other different forms, is that, you know, I feel that it's a responsibility for us as an agency and for me individually to be a thought leader in what we do and to really act as though we're, and actually physically do, steer the direction and the course of the industry and the way we do things and, you know, act as change agents and get people to think about things differently, think about things as more democratic, more conversational, you know, more collaborative. You know, and those kinds of things, you know what, the more people that we can influence into thinking that way, the better it is for the industry. And, you know, frankly, the better it's going to be for us. So, yeah, I mean, it's not just a sales tool. I think for us, it's a reputation tool. It's a word of mouth tool. And it's a little bit of altruism mixed in there as well.
Karina and Allison, there's surely at least one filmmaker in the audience who would love to start generating some buzz for their film, whether it's at South by Southwest this year, or it might be here next year, or it might be at another festival or whatever. There's a filmmaker in the audience who wants to start generating buzz for their movies through blogs. Both of your blogs would be logical places for them to want for their film to get a great review. How does that happen?
Well, I think that it helps to have something beyond the usual, like, look, I have a movie. Can you watch it? Because I think sometimes there's an assumption that if you're a blogger that you have, I don't know, more time to do this or something, you know, like if you know, you have to, I guess, market your film or give some kind of pitch that, like, why would we be interested in watching your movie? Like any other, you know, marketing tool. But at the same time, I think that at least as important and is the social networking aspect of this. Like if I look at your name or your cast list and all of that, and I see people who sound familiar that, you know, I recognize from festivals or from, you know, social networking sites, then I'll be more likely to watch your film.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I do accept screeners, and I get a lot of emails from people who say, you know, I have a movie I'd like to send you, or I have a movie that I'm making that I'd like you to write about, or I have a movie that's going to be at a festival. And I will say that, like, if you don't have a time when you're going to be screening your movie, or it's not coming out on DVD, if it's not going to be available for my readers to actually find it, then it would have to be really personally interesting to me for me to want to write about it. But, you know, if you have no distribution but you're selling DVDs on your website, I mean, I would definitely consider writing about it. But yeah, a lot of it has to do with just being smart about your pitch and trying to prove to me that you're contacting me for a reason out of all the people that you could contact, that, like, you've read my blog, you know, the kinds of things that I write about and the kinds of, like, themes and stuff that I'm interested in reporting on. And that you're not just sending me a form letter.
Flattery always helps too.
Ian, are there any tips that you would give to filmmakers as they're trying to, you know, in terms of that PR element? I mean, a lot of filmmakers at the stage where they're trying to generate this sort of buzz, maybe doing it themselves, and maybe, you know, as like the blog, the name of my blog, you know, self-reliant filmmakers, they may be ones who are actually personally contacting Allison or Karina. Are the strategies that Deep Focus uses strategies that can apply to filmmakers that are working very much in isolation or with a couple of other people?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's, I'm about to go down a list, so you're going to take notes. Now's the time to start. You know, the probably the most important thing is to provide your prospective audience with as many touch points as possible, as many different ways to get a hold of you as they can. So whether that's, you know, creating a way to, for them to follow you on Twitter or a blog that you can routinely post information to that you keep current and that you actually show some dedication with, you know, multiple social network profiles. You don't need too many. Choose one. You know, if people want to follow you, they will. But also create them where you are sure that your audience is most likely to be. And this, again, these are general marketing things, actually. You know, regardless of whether we were talking about films or brands or anything, you know, these go for all of it. You know, ensure that when people are reaching out to you, that you reach back out to them. Frequent polling, hearing what they have to say. Not to bring up my wife again, but but be an active listener. Something that I always get told to do. It's amazing how much you leave at the office. You know, but you know, when someone has a suggestion, take it to heart and act upon it. Don't just hear it. You know, actually listen to it. You know, and yeah, I mean, I guess that's, you know, oh, here's another one, product sampling. You know, recently did this campaign with, I hate using the word campaign in any kind of concept of social media, but it was an effort. And this effort was to introduce people to the series Flight of the Conchords. And if you guys are fans of the show, you'll know what I'm talking about. But we knew we had such a great show on our hands, but it was certainly looked at as a very niche piece of programming. And, you know, one of the things that we did when we saw the pilot was we realized just how good this series can be and how ripe it would be for people to share little snippets of that content. So what we did, and this was a first for HBO, which is a pay cable channel, was premiered that first episode on MySpace and premiere it on MySpace within a community that was dedicated to Flight of the Conchords, making all kinds of downloads available, and not only putting it on that site, but also providing them with embed code. So when television critics, for example, wanted to talk about the series, they could actually show the first episode there while they were talking about it. You don't have to show your whole film there, show a piece of it. But give people an opportunity to experience just a little bit of it. Give them a taste. And if they want, give them the option to get more of it. You know, just an example of actually listening to people when they talk. You know, the community is and continues to be incredibly active. And we got a lot of credit for actually having it build or helping it build this audience for the show and having it be partly responsible for having it come back for a second season. And one of the things that we did in listening to the audience within the you know, the message boards was they wanted t-shirt iron-ons. And I, you know, far be it for me to argue, but there was literally kind of a revolt saying that, you know, they wanted t-shirt iron-ons. Why weren't we making them available? So we did.
I have one.
Now you see, and if you go into this community and look in the download sections, now you'll find t-shirt iron-ons very prominently placed, became the most popular piece of downloaded content from that site. And the t-shirt that was downloaded the most times actually became a t-shirt that is now being sold in the HBO shop in New York and on their site. And it's a design that we created. And we kind of democratically let the audience elect which one it was going to be. So not only did we wind up selling the series, we wound up selling some merch. So it's just a result of listening and acting.
I guess from my perspective, what's worked for me so far, I think, is really focusing on timing and on kind of managing, I guess, what would be your currency. So if you're making a film, there's certain things that you can use as currency. Later in the process, it becomes your film stills, it becomes your trailer. Obviously, that's like the gold. But along the way, there's also certain days and there's also certain events that might be interesting to people in the blogosphere or with news sites. So early on, the first bit of currency that we had for a documentary is a casting call. Okay, we have to find people. That's interesting enough for some people to pick up. And there were a few websites, some decently big ones that did pick up on that. And that's how we found the subjects for our film. Later on, a few key moments were when we met with HBO, when we met with A&E, you know, different times along the way that these events are interesting enough that I might want to send out a little note to people out there. And then obviously as things start winding down and the movie's finishing up, then you really have some of the best currency. And that's when you really start contacting people. But when you do contact people, I think what's most important is you have to keep the tone very, very casual for the most part. If you send a form letter, you're not going to get any responses. And read the people's blogs you're sending to. I spent a day on Karina's blog and Allison's before I sent to them. And same thing with the video game blogs that I was doing. So I think that's really important. And, I'd say the third thing would be, really don't oversaturate yourself and don't keep sending the same blogs the same things. If you're starting out the movie, don't write to Variety. Wait a little bit on that. Start with the blogs that have, you know, that you realize have kind of less things going on, so they might be able to pay attention to your movie. And then once you start building the blogs, have somewhere you can catalog them and show them off to people. We're using Mahalo right now, and we have a great list of everywhere we've been featured, every newspaper, every website and blog. And now I can just send the link to somebody, and instead of writing a huge letter on, look at all these places, and it's an enormous, unwieldy 10K email, I'll just say, hey, Karina, here's what my film's about, and just leave the link at the bottom. If she wants to see it, she can see it. If not, she doesn't have to.
I think I'd like to open it up for questions from you guys. Yeah. The question was, is the term blog a good word or a bad word for everyone outside of our circle?
Well, certainly it's used pejoratively by some journalists. I kind of have a running thing of, you know, citing this story that Peter Bart wrote a couple years ago where he was like, basically, you might be a blogger if, like, saying, you know, if you're on the red carpet and you see somebody wearing pajamas who hasn't washed their hair, they might be a blogger. And it's like, I mean, this kind of like cranky old manism about, you know, beware, the bloggers are coming and they're going to tear down the castle. And it's, I mean, I think that stuff is so silly. But yeah, I mean, I guess that if that's your experience of blogs, is that they're written by people who don't bathe, then, you know, you might have a problem with that word.
You know, when they do, sometimes one of the best ways to know if a word is actually making it is if it gets used in research. So, you know, there's been tons of research asking kids, for example, like, do you actively blog? And I wish I had an actual number, but a strikingly large percentage of kids, as people in this room even, you know, blog on a daily basis. And whether that's on, you know, their social network or on a blog themselves, or, you know, using any other kinds of tools that they have available to them. I think it's a word that is now both a noun and a verb. But again, as Karina said, it's also used oftentimes to draw the line between those that are journalists and those that are not. And I think that's an incorrect use of the term. So it kind of, I guess it all depends on, you know, the punctuation that's after it sometimes. Yeah.
I think one of the issues too is that for people in, I don't know, I always use my mother and father as a sort of index for this stuff because they're not really connected. You know, for them, a blog means, okay, this is a journal where you're posting photos of your babies or your kittens or whatever it is. And that's certainly not what the sites that are represented up here are about. They are, you know, in an earlier era, Spout or the IFC, and Indie Eye, is that what it's called?
Yes.
Okay. It's a new. I'm used to saying the IFC blog would be maybe print publications, you know, analogous to Cineast or Film Comment or whatever. And the nice thing about them, the really important thing about them, is that they're updated daily as opposed to monthly or even, you know, once every 2 months. So I think that there is a sense of that pejorative notion comes from different types of blogs, because it's not as if there's one kind of blog out there. There's certainly different types.
And the fact remains that, I mean, there are blogs that are more read than many, many newspapers that are out there. So, it's a legitimate form of communication. It's not like, you know, 15 years ago, I guess, you know, when there were zines that were out there that were self-published and self-distributed, and you have to pick them up in certain places, and you don't have a distribution problem with blogs. I mean, they were available to anybody. So, you know, I think a lot of if there are negative connotations, it's probably, you know, derived from threat than anything else.
Jealousy.
And the fact that they've been so overused. I mean, newspapers are news sites, what zines were to blogs. And right, I think, right, you know, these are edgy, insipid words.
Well, and how many celebrity journalists are there? Right. I mean, there's plenty of celebrity bloggers.
Do you ever find yourself using a word other than blog to describe your site though?
Well, I've definitely avoided it when, in terms of like access for, particularly for interviews, to say like, I would like an interview for the blog is usually, does not go across well. So maybe for, you know, for the website or just IFC would like an interview. Because there still is this tendency to think of blogs as a marketing tool. So they say, no, you can't have an interview with the director, but why don't you post our trailer? You know, and so I think that there's still, in terms of the industry, something like you know, a negative sense attached to it.
Yeah, I got a really condescending email from a film festival press office a couple months ago. You know, I filled out my application to get press credentials for their festival, like anybody else, and after not receiving a response back from their press office when I was supposed to, I sent them an email asking if they received my application. And somebody in the press office responded, you know, sorry, you know, everybody has a blog these days. We can't give them all press passes. And it's like, I mean, did they even look at my application? No, they just saw a Spout blog.
And so what distinguished, what would your argument be to those people? This is a different type of blog because...
Well, I think that what I personally do is try to fill a void that's kind of come up because there, as you said, there isn't really like daily film journalism being happening anywhere else except for film blogs. So I would try to talk to them about that. You know, but I think that really if you do just spend a day on the blog, you see that I have a personal blog and it's very different from Spout blog. You know, it is about like cats and, you know, photo booth pictures of me and, you know, whatever. But it's very different from what I do in Spout blog.
And obviously there's a scale to it. You know, I could like photocopy a few pages of my reviews. It doesn't make me a print journalist necessarily. You know, like there's a whole scale of things out there. And, you know, blogs should be recognized that way.
I'd say as a filmmaker, also do your research. I mean, we've been, you know, blessed with a lot of press and magazines, but we've gotten more response out of our Boing Boing post than anything else. Look at the numbers, like Ian was saying. Blogs helped us a lot more than any print media did.
Okay, let's take another question. Yeah.
I know if you ran a really fun, insightful, idiosyncratic blog and you sent it to me and, or were I somebody who was making a narrative movie, I'd definitely be much more interested in casting you. I'd have a better idea of who you were as a person. And I think I would love to see more actor blogs. I haven't seen that many personally, but maybe you guys have.
I haven't seen an actor blog many actor blogs that weren't the product of their management, you know, with some headshots and their pets. And things like that. You know, sometimes acting is a weird world because, you know, sometimes you just want actors to shut up and act. And sometimes you want them to be activists. And you get, you know, people from all different spectrums. I mean, I would love to read George Clooney's personal blog, to be honest with you. I'd like to live vicariously through that. You know, but he doesn't have one, at least not that I know of.
Yes.
And I wish you did. So, you know, but, yeah, I mean, it depends on what you want to get out of it. Again, I mean, if you're looking for, you know, to build a fan base for the actor, or to get, you know, more acting opportunities, I mean, those are two different, things altogether.
I would imagine that for certain actors that, are especially working in certain genres, that's a very useful technique, you know. It's useful. Let's just put it that way, because you're able to then reach the niche audience for, let's say it's an actor who specifically does, let's say, low budget horror films. The people that are following that blog, then when the next film comes out, maybe it's a different filmmaker. But I would be very inclined to cast, if I'm making a low budget horror film, I would be very inclined to cast that actor, knowing that, well, this many people are reading his blog. Now I know I have a built-in audience for my film, you know, at least one built-in audience.
I would also add that it's actually a good way to, and depending on the kind of actor you are, the kind of person you are, maybe, you know, actually do some reputation management too. You know, things go wrong in Hollywood all the time. And there are blogs that are dedicated to chronicling, when they go wrong. And, you know, having a blog is oftentimes a good opportunity to share a point of view that's not an issued statement from the actor's manager. So, you know, that shows that you are committed to, you know, letting people in.
Other questions? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
can we just repeat the question real quick? Go ahead, Ian, if you want to even restate it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the question was basically if there are conflicts of interest in not only running a company but also running a blog that actually bears my name. You know, it's interesting. There have been times, I'll be honest, when I've decided after I've probably written a long bloviated blog post that. You know, I said, you know what, maybe this isn't a good idea to put out there. And I don't have a problem with self-censoring. I have a problem with being censored. And I also don't have a problem, as a matter of fact, this is the reason why I have the blog and why it says, you know, what I do and why I don't draw a line or a church and state line between the blog and the agency is that, you know what, we're going to have an opinion and we have opinions on things. We'd say no. We say yes. To some things, we say no to probably more. And it's important, I think, for us, again, to go back to that thought leader thing, to be able to have opinions. And I think that's what's missing in a lot of businesses and honestly filmmaking today are their lack of opinions and the willingness and mandate to appeal to the lowest common denominator. And, you know, I don't think like we have nothing to hide. And that's really why you see in a lot of businesses that the CEOs actively blog. They get themselves into a ton of trouble, though, too, as a result. So you have to be careful with what you wish for. But, you know, I think that if you are doing it and if you are genuinely transparent, I think that speaks volumes not only about you personally, but also professionally and with the company that you run.
Karina and Allison, can we talk for a second about conflicts of interest when you're spending all this time online, you're building up these whatever, MySpace or Facebook profiles of all your friends, you know, so that you have these readers and they send you a film and it stinks. What do you do?
Well, I'm not, you know, I don't have a mandate like Variety has to review everything I see. So oftentimes it's not even worth it to me to say really negative things about Hollywood movies most of the time. You know, it's just not, I'd rather like put my energy into helping people find things that are good. And usually I'm only interested in writing about a Hollywood movie if I have something new to bring to the conversation. Mm. But for me, I have more conflict of interest things because of what Spout, the main site, does. Because we do a lot of things with outreach to filmmakers. We just commissioned a web series directed by Joe Swanberg, who has this film here at this festival called Nights and Weekends. And I can see the film because I'm interested in it, but I'm not going to write about it because he's on our payroll, you know? And so that kind of thing comes up every now and then. And I, you know, just sort of try to make judgments about it.
Yeah. Yeah, to that note, there's a category on my blog that says self-promotion. So I would call it out. I mean, like if it's something that is going to benefit me and I choose to write about it, at least I call it out.
That's pretty much my whole blog.
Yeah, right. So,
Allison?
Yeah, I mean, you know, our sister company, IFC Films, releases films, so I generally avoid those entirely. But otherwise, yeah, it's a whole, you know, there are many degrees. It's a small community. Like, IFC.com has actually picked up Joe Swanberg's. None of us can cover Joe Swanberg films ever again. His reputation is built on the internet, and now no longer. So I don't really see a reason if... Well, if a film is at a festival, if it's of interest to me, either in a positive or negative way, and I want to write about it, I generally will. But I try to avoid things that make me feel uncomfortable in any way writing about. So if I feel like there's a conflict of interest there, even if it's a personal one, then I'm not going to do it.
Okay. Other questions? Yeah. Okay. The question was, do any of us work with any marketing or PR agencies, publicity agencies? And if so, describe the relationship.
I go through, you know, whenever we do an interview or I assign one of the freelance writers on the news site to do an interview, we go through, you know, a publicist firm. So there is the usual game of, oh, you didn't cover this film, so maybe we're not going to let you have this interview. But I think that's pretty true for any news outlet. It's always a push and pull. In terms of marketing, not really. Marketing for films is directed to our site sometimes, but it's not something that generally catches my eye.
Pretty much the same for me. I get emails from publicists all day long. Most of them I understand are blanket releases, and I ignore a lot of them unless I'm already interested in a film.
Yeah. I mean, we are one. So, you know, it helps to be able to reach out to others as kind of, peers. It's not only is it, you know, kind of marketing strategy and media buying and creative, but we also have a PR firm in-house that acts on behalf of our clients. So it's a real full communications thing. And, we know how to speak the same language. So, which I think, by the way, is very important to kind of know who you're speaking to in any situation, obviously. But it's a very positive working relationship.
Victor, what about you?
Of course not. But as far as you're saying, it's working with the PR firm.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, what happened with us, what we did is far along in the process, we worked with a publicist a local publicist who's been amazing with to work for. But that came along later in the process. At the beginning, it wasn't about that. But it's helped tremendously as far as, I can send a casual email that doesn't tell a whole lot to all sorts of different people. But it's great because Jill will follow up with a press release, which is really well written with pictures and websites and web links. And it's just this, I can play the casual role, and then maybe they'll pay attention to that because Jill is, supporting it with a much better email coming their way.
And when did you, for those that haven't worked with someone like that before, can you walk the audience through that process of when you decided it was time to find someone and how you went about doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the best, it's like a plug, but Chris Gore's film festival book was like a Bible to us. I think before we got into South by Southwest, as soon as we applied to different festivals, we started just reading the film festival book over and over. And something that he said is that every independent filmmaker thinks a publicist will not help them very much, and every filmmaker is wrong. And it's absolutely true. The publicist has been one of the most helpful things we've done. And I got lucky because we have an executive producer who has a ton of experience. And as I was writing these emails to different publicists, he said, oh, forget it. I have the best one. And he gave us Jill. So I think you really have to research it. I know before we got Jill, what I was doing is I was going through websites, finding films that were very similar to ours, Darkon, which played here 2 years ago. And I was contacting those publicists saying, hey, you publicized a film very similar to ours. I want to know how you did it. I want to know if you want to work for us.
Okay, great. Other questions? I'm sorry. Yeah, I know.
Being an addict, I would say it's certainly the length of time spent on the site. I mean, if I see that people are getting there, and only spending 10 seconds on it, and probably they think they're getting one thing, but in reality, you're getting another. I want them to be spending at least enough time to read a couple of posts, or at least the one that they were looking for. So length of time, number of page views per session, the number of unique visitors, where they're coming from, where they're coming from geographically, as well as where they're coming from, organically. So, whether that's search results, and if it's search results, what terms, or if it's links on other websites. Every blog post should give you the ability, or every blog should give you the ability to track back, so you can see, who's linking to you contextually. All those things are important. Probably the easiest thing to do is Google Analytics, free. It's a very easy thing to implement on any blog they have on any platform. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, I think the one you said about the time is really important. I didn't realize that early on. We had one day when we had like thousands of hits, and then we looked at the time later on, weeks later, it was like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
This is worthless. And I think also what you're saying as far as links coming in, that way you can really get a sense yourself of, oh, this blog published a link to my page and this is how many hits I got. There's been a lot of blogs that I didn't realize how powerful they were. And then when I looked at the numbers and the analytics, I thought, oh my gosh, this is like the most valuable blog that we've been mentioned on. And that's really important to keep track of.
For us, it's a combination of page views, where the traffic is coming from, and also where people are going afterwards, you know, because ideally, like if they're going to any other website besides for Spout blog, we want it to be spout.com. So,
and I honestly try not to look very much because I obsess. So, so I kind of, you know, see no evil. Yeah.
And it's not your job to do that, right?
I would just get fired if I wasn't doing a good job. So,
well, I mean,
you have unionized people who are there to check the stats, and that is not your domain, right?
But checking the stats, I think, helps me do my job because it helps me figure out what people respond to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can say for myself too that. Much like Ian, you know, I look at a combination of different things. I know that in the past, when I started the blog 3 years ago, I was doing a lot more reviews of films, and I was actually accepting submissions from a lot of filmmakers who were trying to get their work seen. Very, very, very independent outside of the mainstream do-it-yourself filmmakers. And I still try to do a little bit of that, but it's incredibly time-consuming, and I do also make films, and I just don't have time. You know, ultimately it became a decision for me about what do I want to write about, because I find having the website is very valuable for me personally. It's enriching and fulfilling. It's put me in touch with a lot of people that I'm happy to know now. But writing these reviews and watching, you know, building up this enormous stack of screeners, ultimately was the thing that had to go. And I decided that part of that through looking at the stats and saying, you know what, people aren't coming to this site for my reviews unless it's maybe tied into South by Southwest, and it's like a series of reviews. So that's something for me, I would say.
I almost left out the most important one, by the way. It's comments. I mean, first of all, keep your comments turned on, people. I mean, let people interact with you and respond to the people that think it's important enough to leave a comment on the blog, and to see, you know, a blog post that generates 20 comments from, you know, 15 different people. I mean, that tells you right away exactly not only what's hitting, but what's resonating.
And if you want to take it to the next level, when you really start getting a lot of traffic on your blog, you can even make a forum. I didn't even think about it, and then my brother recommended it. And the forum's taken on a life of its own. It's like an extension of the comments rather than a one-to-one communication. We have people just going off. I mean, telling their life stories on this forum. There's thousands of them, and I would have never guessed. It's a great next step.
Yeah, question. Search engine optimization.
Spout pays people that are not me to do that.
Yeah, same here. IFC does.
I mean, I do it myself. There's two things that you can do that are probably so simple, and that's making sure that the name of your blog, that all the code is right, and that if someone searches for the name of your blog, that it's the first search result. I mean, that's the easy way. You know, the other thing that really helps with search engine optimization is to write about topics that are being actively discussed in the blogosphere. And I don't mean that like as a gimmick. I mean, if it's important enough for a lot of people to be discussing it, you know, think about how you can use that to relate to what it is that you're doing. Because a lot of the algorithms that go into search rankings have to do with in and outbound links. So the more that your blog, your post can be a part of the overall conversation that's going on, the higher those search rankings are going to be.
And if you find it early, it's even better. Twice in the 2 years we've made this, I've stumbled on something just out of chance earlier than many people. I blogged about it first, and that raised our rank a ton. I mean, after those 2 days, our rank went way up. So if you see something that's the first blog post you're seeing and it sounds like it's a new topic, jump on it, blog about it.
For me, no, and increasingly no, because I'm watching so much stuff online. But I don't know. I mean, I there are certainly things that I'm not interested in, but I don't think that there are things that are real or not real.
And I would second what you said before. It helps if you have a way for other people to access your film. You know, if your film is sitting there in a vacuum, then our writing about it really won't matter to most people because no one else can see it.
The one other thing about that, though, is that sort of tying into what Victor and Ian said about writing about something first, is that maybe you're one of the things that we think makes a movie real is that it's screening someplace, right? I mean, that's what you're talking about. And yet, if you're the first person, let's say you pull something out of the pile and you see it and it blows your mind, and you write about it, and you're the first person to write about it, and that there's that sense of discovery in that for you, and also in that post, and that things start generating from that. That's also a way that something becomes real, right? And if it's on the internet, it must be real, right? So, yeah.
I know that I kind of as a, on a lark, we decided to do a video blog about our time at South by Southwest. We've been meaning to do it forever, and then we just thought, you know, our day-to-day lives are not very interesting making this movie unless we're shooting. So when we came to South by Southwest, we said, okay, let's do a video blog. So I've been video blogging daily every night, and it's been amazingly helpful. I would recommend it very highly. We were linked on Variety yesterday. So I'd say as an extension of your blog, go for it. If there's specific times that are much more interesting than others, maybe you want to do that. Maybe you want to keep it on a weekly schedule. Something where you're not blogging 20 minutes of footage on a daily basis and nobody's watching. You know, keep it short and to the point.
Yeah, and it's gotten so easy to do. I mean, there's a site that you probably see on a lot of the flat screens out here, Kite. You know, I literally in 5 minutes did like a quick little intro just trying it out and got it from my phone. I shot it on my phone and uploaded it, and it was playing on my blog. In literally less than 5 minutes. Obviously, it wasn't that deep or insightful, but it was proof of concept for me. And, you know, that kind of thing, along with interviews that I do every so often, you know, I'll bring somebody into the office for an interview. I remember blogging about some, like, series of viral videos that Mr. T did for, unfortunately, I can't remember the company that he did them for, but it was some kind of, like, high-tech virtualization server thing. And, the guy that created the videos at the company wrote me an email saying, hey, I read your blog about what it is that we were doing. You know, Mr. T is going to be in New York. I wanted to know if you wanted to spend some time with him.
Wow.
I said, yeah, awesome. So he came into the office, and instead of just having it be, you know, I requested that instead of just having me live out a childhood fantasy and have him sign my underoos, allow him to actually literally sit there with me against the wall. I had a camera, and I did you know, about a 20-minute interview with him about, you know, about talent, Hollywood talent and online video and the challenges that exist and the production values and things like that. And I posted it up on my blog and shared it on my, you know, Facebook profile and all kinds of other things. And it really took off. I mean, it's just another way, again, of connecting that is probably even can be even more personal than just the written word.
We've dabbled in a lot of video, and I really briefly did like a daily show at Cinematical, but I do think that there's kind of a hole in the market right now, and maybe the thing you guys are doing will fill it, but there really isn't a good daily movie news video podcast, and I would watch one if there was.
How are you all setting that up, Allison?
It is, you know, being taken care of by forces beyond me, but IFC has expanded into doing music and political coverage. And so it is actually going to be only partially about film. And so we're going to have a variety of hosts, and it's going to be an interesting experience.
Yeah, question.
I know that IFC definitely does through, I think, the same agency who does our search engine optimization.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to. It's on my corporate card. I actually don't do it anymore just because, you know, all the organic traffic has been, has just been going so well. To me, it was a bridge to getting to that. By the way, the company was Hitachi. Sorry, I remember.
Okay. One last question. And then, I'll throw one out to you guys. If I could just have you each name some filmmaker, some site, some interface, whatever you want to talk about, someone that gets it right, this convergence between filmmaking and besides your own, of course, some site that gets it right, or some filmmaker that understands how that you think really understands how to reach audiences through the internet.
I'm probably going to steal Karina's, but I think Four Eyed Monsters, which is a very indie movie, was a huge help for me early on. They've done all sorts of things. They've used all sorts of avenues to really spreading the word. They have counters on there. They have video blogs. I can't even begin to tell you everything they have, but we were looking at their site a lot early on to figure out what we could do.
That actually wasn't mine. Spout did some stuff with Four Eyed Monsters where we basically saw that they were using... they were really taking advantage of social networks, and we set up a deal with them and YouTube. And every time you clicked on, their whole movie was uploaded to YouTube. And every time you clicked on the Spout banner above, the video, you'd go to Spout. And if you started an account, your first account at Spout, then we would give the filmmaker $1. So they made 50 grand. So that's, you know, one way filmmakers can make money off of blogs. I was going to say AJ Schnock, who had a movie here last year called Kurt Cobain About a Son. And he has a blog called All These Wonderful Things, which is at edendale.typepad.com. And when he's not making movies, he does basically documentary journalism. So he's creating a reason for people to keep on coming back. And then that, you know, feeds into interest in his movies.
You stole mine.
Go ahead. I was going to say Lance Wyler, who was...
Another great one.
Yeah, okay. Has done some really amazing kind of... web support, and just not even saying it's a support for his films is really unfair. They exist at least as much in terms of like games, and in terms of, you know, he self-distributes his films as well, and so I think he's really done an amazing job with that.
Allison's talking about Lance Wyler, who is with his website, his film last year that was on the festival circuit and did a lot of other types of screenings was Head Trauma. And he has started a site in the last couple of years called The Workbook Project. And I believe it's workbookproject.com.
Yeah,
and he's here. And I don't know which panel he's on, but he's on some panels. So keep an eye out for him if you're not aware of his work and his internet presence. Yeah.
And I would just say, my boy Victor over here, you know, what they've been doing, you know, to support the film has been great. You know, if you go onto the blog today, I challenge you to not root for these guys. It's a very personal look, even at like kind of what's going on here at this festival right now. And I think that's, again, it's an emotional connection that you have, not just with the film, but the filmmakers. And I think that's kind of the secret sauce in all this.
Yeah. Thanks again for coming. If you are interested in perusing these fine folks' blogs, I've put links to all of their blogs on. I don't mean this to be shameless self-promotion, but this is mine. And if you go here today, I'll just leave this up. So each of these people's names will lead to their blogs. And I can also put up links to AJ's and Lance's blogs as well, which will lead you to the last things we talked about. Hope you got something out of today's panel. I hope you have a great day today. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Thanks.